Hello and welcome to the new Art of the Cut podcast, brought to you in partnership with Frame.io. We're about halfway through our summer blockbuster season, where we're bringing you Art of the Cut episodes twice a week. I hope you've been enjoying the double shot of editorial goodness each week. By the end of this month, we'll have completed our 300th Art of the Cut interview. Time flies when you're having fun. My name is Steve Hallfish. I'm a feature film and documentary editor. For more than 7 years, I've been speaking to my colleagues in film, TV, and docs about the art and craft of editing. If you're interested in reading this interview with visual support and clips and trailers, head on over to blog.frame.io, where there's a ton of great expert content for film professionals of all types. Today, we're speaking with editor Jennifer Lilly about Hulu's Master of None series. Jennifer won a Primetime Emmy for her editing on the series in 2017. She's also edited feature films like Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade, The One I Love, and Electric Children. She's also worked on other TV series including Love Life, Living With Yourself, and Are We There Yet? Tell me about the choice of aspect ratio. Is that something that the cinematographer and the director chose, or was it something that you spoke into?
There was always the intent to have this very formal approach to the show, taking the page from European masters. And that was kind of an aesthetic choice. Yeah, that Aziz and the DP decided together as they started testing and seeing what would best capture the tone and tenor of the show.
Did it have any ramifications on your editing or no?
Not really. Yeah, not really. It was full. So there was no wiggle room north, south. It was completely full frame. This was shot on film on 16. It was fun to see, like, you know, there'd be a little light leak at the bottom. There'd be some really film stuff going on the edges there, you know, clean it up, whatever we had to do.
Did the fact that it was shot on film, did any of that make any difference to you, or was that more to your assistant editor that had to deal with film transfers instead of digital?
Well, it was interesting because I was cutting in New York and production was in London. So we had this natural lag. Honestly, what does affect me is just the timing of when I can get my dailies, you know, when we go through film process and then do telesigning. But that was kind of all done by the time I got into the cutting room in the morning. I kind of got dailies at regular time.
Oh, because there was a time change, and the time change probably helped you.
Exactly. That time change helped me. You know, I was in a cutting room here in New York. The whole rest of the edit team was in London. From time to time, Alan would be in LA or there'd be other colleagues in LA. It was kind of, I had a master clock under my center computer of like London time, New York time, and LA time.
Can you talk to us about what the aesthetic is of the cutting?
Even at the script phase and talking to Aziz very early on about the concept for this season, it was very exciting. And it is remarkable when you watch the show just how different the look and the feel of the show. And that's always something that Alan and Aziz are looking to do. Let's push the boundaries. What can we do next? They're driven by what's the next idea that's exciting to us. They're not going to just make another season because we did well in the last one. This is the cutting style is quite lyrical. It's very much about the essence of what we're trying to say. It's minimal coverage, which was exciting to me as an editor to flex those muscles. As the season went on, we were like, oh, here's kind of the rules of the show, which generally we don't really work with restrictions like that. You know, you kind of come up with a vocabulary and it turned to be really about juxtaposition. It's much more of like a psychological edit, particularly in episode 4. Some ideas changed while we were shooting. The script laid out very specific progression. And then as time went, well, actually, I think we need another shot in the hospital. I think we need this shot. We need more inserts. What should those inserts be? And it was kind of like that for that whole episode. It was like very dynamic of, no, we need this shot. We need this shot to really build the progression and have the amount of material we needed to play with so that we could tell that story the most effectively.
Talk to me about what coverage there was that you decided not to use and how much the director and DP just said, this is what we're giving them.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. You know, at the beginning of the schedule, there was more coverage until we could find our voice and find the tone. that we could feel confident that it was going to work, that it was going to create the mood and the style that we were going for. So as the schedule moved on, we got to really focus in on what's the meaning of the scene? What's the most important piece of the scene? And, you know, you take many takes to make sure that, first of all, you have a whole scene, but also that the piece of the scene that's really supposed to resonate is really working for that. And then once we got into the rhythm and you calibrated all of us, you just kind of had, and I think in the audience too, you have to calibrate a little bit to the pacing.
I remember one of the early episodes, like there's a cutaway to a birdhouse or something, like, because that's very European to me, the kind of shots that you chose that were not of the scene. What was the purpose of those and why did you choose them and how did you find them?
The function was really passage of time, shots that we did not use devices like pre-lapping audio. We didn't use other tools that we have to show passage of time. Having those nature interstitials, evocative, beauty shot, that was like a breath. The vocabulary we kind of describe as the punctuations. And it did take some experimenting. And it was definitely inspired by different world and European auteurs stylistically. Very compelling for a nerdy editor like me, where I was like, wow, look how different this can play with 5 frames less and more. And when you make changes in a sequence like that, you can't just make change and go back 5 seconds and play it down and see if it works. No. I mean, you're back to the beginning and having to watch how it affects the whole. And of course, we're thinking about the audience a little bit, but in the initial phases, when you're piecing it together, let's do the brave edit. Let's just try it and see what happens.
Let's try the brave edit. What does that mean?
It's like someone sitting in a laundromat, just exhausted. How long does it have to be for us to really convey just how exhausted, you know? Nope, let's keep it going. Let's keep it going. Let's keep it going. And just really go for it. I mean, it's kind of like subtle stuff, but sometimes when you're cutting and you're building something, you have these voices in your head, you know, of like, this isn't done. They're like, what's the studio going to say? Or that we're going to say, or the audience going to say, let's just be with these characters and just feel this story and let's give it the amount of time it needs.
There's a tendency to think, oh, what's the director going to want? Or what's the studio going to want? And you do have to get those people out of your head, right?
You do. You have to start. You definitely have to start there and let the creative process happen. Otherwise, you start telling yourself no, even at the beginning, when you have no idea what the results are going to be. It's so important to keep an open mind with your own work and your own creative spirit and director's intent. Now, I always love to explore what the intent is and can we make that work? But it's also what are the possibilities?
Did you have any discussion about intent or did they leave you discovering intent up to you?
It's something very special that I've found working with these particular creators, with Alan and Aziz. From season one, I've been so lucky to work on all 3 seasons of the show. From the intention to our result and how close they are has been remarkable every single time I work with them. It's like nothing else that I've seen. It's really so well thought out. And then in the execution stage, their enthusiasm and excitement for the work and real clarity for the work is very inspiring, I think, to all the departments.
You mentioned that there was not a lot of coverage. What did you spend your time doing? And I don't mean that in the way that it sounds, but a lot of what we do as editors, right, is pouring through coverage. And oh my gosh, I've got 20 different setups and there's 15 takes of each. And I've got to look at all that stuff. If without the coverage, you have a chance to explore other things. So what did you do with your time?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, at the beginning of the day, you know, get everything organized in the box and watching everything. And then you try out a shot progression, even a scene by scene progression with the selects that you pick. From there, it really was sharpening of, okay, in this scene, here's the most important part of the scene. Okay, so let me go back to the takes. What take really makes that moment poignant? What is the best take for that very specific moment? The refining process of when you're trying to pace a show like that, because you have to go back and evaluate, it is kind of time consuming. And it was TV schedule, so I had a number of episodes I was working on at the same time. So you're kind of bouncing around a little bit. But oddly enough, it was less different than my usual workflow than I expected.
One of the things that I noticed as kind of a rule or an aesthetic of the show is that audio cuts off hard with picture. Can you talk to me about any of the other rules that you either discovered you were using or somebody said, this is what I want?
Whenever we try something, it's like, oh, it's not the show. That's not the show. So we just kind of felt it in our bones of like, yeah, that's cool, but it's not in the spirit of what we're doing here. And we kind of found them. That was one of them, just like hard cuts. No prelapse, audio prelapse, post-lapse. Obviously no score. It's a lot less music than we've ever worked with before on the show.
Did you find that there was some aspect of the editing of not having coverage that it revealed something or it changed the way the edits felt?
Yeah. And sometimes when you truncate the head of a shot and let that moment land in the timeline in different places, it has a different impact. If we add more head of the walking around and then she has a smoke, is that feel like she's deeper in thought or that it's a more poignant beat? Or is it just we cut to her and she's smoking? What works best? Then we've got the frame in front of it. Well, let's see what happens. Do we leave that laundry room? And are we sitting with that laundry room for a long time? And we just cut to her and she's just sitting there. Things like that. You just like me alone in the cutting room with my crew in London, I'm just like obsessed with that. You know, it's like you just take these deep dives into real kind of nitty gritty minutia like that.
How did you decide, well, sometimes we can cut and other times we don't cut at all, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. Setting the tone when the other couple comes over and there's that kind of tension. It wasn't one of the characters alone. It wasn't just the two of them together. It was a different type of scenario, having characters that didn't fit in the frame for whatever reason and the kind of drama that was playing out in that scene.
The small amount of coverage you have, did it change the way that you watched the dailies, that you knew I'm going to be in a wide shot the whole time, so I therefore have to watch this shot differently than I would if I knew I was going to go into coverage here and here and here and here?
Yeah, certainly. A lot of times the way I work is I do like to see how coverage fits together. I kind of like to get my cutting pattern sussed out so that I know what parts of the coverage that I'm going to use. By the end of the process, I've watched all these takes like hundreds of times. But in that initial phase, it sharpens my awareness of what I'm looking for that piece of coverage.
Did you look at the angles and say, this is the angle for this scene, and then have to pick a take inside that angle? Or did you say, I'm going to look at all of them, and if there's a better performance and not as good of an angle, I'm going to use that?
Yeah, so really performance driven, and then deciding not to use a piece of coverage. You know, let's hang in the 70 frame. Let's not like turn it around and to see what she's picking up. Let's just stay and hear her pick it up and, you know, just different things like that as far as when we were developing our style and the voice of the show.
The other kind of style thing that I noted was holding on a shot even after someone has walked out of it.
Yeah.
You said that you were very precise. Of course, I'm sure you were. Five frames makes a lot of difference. And yet somebody walks out of the frame and you stay on the environment. Why? What's the value?
I think there's some mystery to it that can be kind of exciting, especially when it's like a real transition into a different moment in time. It's like a digestion, again, to digest what just happened. And it feels like you're just being given a privilege, really, to be a fly in the wall in some of these very intimate, specific moments in someone's relationship, and all those moments make up the life.
So often people talk about an editor's style, but you really shouldn't have a style, right? It's the style of the work. Can you talk to me about personal style and staying away from that?
You really have to listen to the material and let that drive your choices and your experimentation, you know, which is really exciting.
How did you collaborate? What kind of sharing did you do? What kind of discussion did the editors have?
It all was changing and shifting because of the pandemic. Ben did the first two episodes and I did the back three. She really set some of the tones and I'd watch it and we'd talk about it and, oh, what are you guys doing here? And let's try this. But not as much as I usually really enjoy when I'm in the same country or even better in the same space.
So you didn't even have your assistant editor with you either. Was the assistant also in London?
the assistant was also in London, yeah.
More and more has been the case with people during the pandemic.
Yeah, we were all very interested to see how it changes our industry and how it changes our work.
We talked about this a little bit, but there's no music except for a couple of diegetic music choices and an opera scene that carries over multiple scenes. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, it was, again, one of those choices where the show's always had music. It's always been really important to the creators and to the show. Having it very sparse, like all the other elements of the show, seemed correct. We did play a little bit with it at the beginning, but it was clear just those few diegetic moments really stand out when you see them.
I didn't notice too much of sound design. Talk to me, did you add that in? How did that inform the mood and the tone?
It was very subtle, the sound design, really subtle. The beginning has a very romantic kind of lens, and I think that the sound kind of mimics that. You get into later in the episodes when things are more dramatic, and then you get into New York City, into Lisa's apartment, and you can kind of hear that invading her apartment. Anything there in the country is like this idyllic, quiet. Then you get into New York, and it's like there's always that jackhammer. It's like you're going through something and there's a jackhammer right next to you, you know, having it feel more invasive.
Did you place those things in there to give yourself that tone?
Yeah, we did place a lot of stuff, being the resident New Yorker on the show. It's like, is that the great thing? Yeah, this is that, you know, louder on the jacket. And I think that juxtaposition is when the characters are in moments of isolation, the lack of sound that Denise is feeling in the country, and how the quiet can be terrifying. As terrifying as when you're going through something in the city and you just need peace and quiet and there's a jackhammer. I think that sound-wise, that juxtaposition was important to describe what's going on emotionally.
Something I've asked the last couple of interviews about, probably because I'm interested in it myself, is agents. Do you have an agent? What's the value of an agent to you? Why have one and how do you get one?
I do have an agent. We met early in my career. She's has access to everything that's going on. What scripts are coming in? Who's looking? Like, what's happening? What's being developed? And pitching me for stuff that I would never have known is even in the works. Of course, it's terribly uncomfortable to like negotiate your own deal. So that's always really helpful. And that was kind of my initial, like, oh God, is there a way I don't have to do this anymore? Because you don't really know what your value or worth or what you should be asking for. So to have an expert like, with your experience and this many credits and this kind of thing, and you know, a lot goes into it about what you feel like you know we can ask for, and a lot of politics. I think that that's an enormous help as well.
Also, they kind of have personalities, right? You say, oh, this is the kind of project that I want to work on. These are the guys that are going to get me into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And these are the agents that are going to get me onto a cool indie.
That's true. You know, at the beginning when I was early in my career and just had maybe cut one movie, I didn't feel like I had the luxury to, you know what I mean? To like, really like, oh, I get to choose whoever I want. It's similar, like you just don't get to choose to, oh, these are all the best projects. This is my dream show. I mean, you should always have that in mind, like have your goalposts of like, this is my dream director. But you have to be at a certain place in your career where you actually get to make some choices like that, especially when you're trying to make a living.
Yeah, I talked to Joy McMillan about that. She said, I was just happy to get $2,000 a week. And they were like, no, Joy. This is the whole point of the Oscar thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. Now you have leverage.
I mean, that's definitely one of those important things. Like you said, good cop, bad cop. Oh, I really want to do your project. And you let the agent go, no, she wants to do the project, but we need this. You are the one that doesn't, you don't have to say those things.
Yeah, it's hard to fight for yourself, especially with producers that you actually have very intimate relationships after you land the gig. That part's hard. It's like you're going to go knock down and dirty in negotiations and be like, all right, you get the job, and then you have to start fresh.
Yeah. Oh, that's an excellent point, right? Because I've had that too, where like if something goes wrong at the beginning, now you're fighting uphill with someone the whole way. And the same thing could be true with a negotiation where like, yeah, I got the money I wanted, but now this person hates me.
Yeah, you get like a vibe. I don't know what happened on that conversation. They somehow worked it out, but between me and the producer, we're cool because I, you know, we don't have baggage like that.
great. It was so interesting to explore this really unique show, and I hope people get a chance to watch it. So nice talking to you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Steve.
That's it for Art of the Cut this week. Thank you so much for listening. Again, these interviews are available to read at blog.frame.io, where they're supported with great visual content, images, video clips, and more. Also, it's a great opportunity to check out the other expert content on the blog for filmmakers of all types. Also, check out my book, Art of the Cut, Conversations with Film and TV Editors, for a topic-driven, curated experience. Thanks to my guest, Jennifer Lilly.
Thanks also to Dylan Giovanetto for editing today's podcast using Adobe Audition. Thanks to Frame.io for their support of Art of the Cut and its pledge to keep this content coming your way. If this is a podcast that you got something out of, follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Steve Hullfish. And so you don't miss all the great upcoming interviews on the Art of the Cut podcast, subscribe to this podcast and give it a review, please. And if you have a friend in the film business or who aspires to be in the film business, make sure to tell them about the Art of the Cut podcast and blog.frame.io.